Can you hear me now?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Okay, go. No Verizon commercial, me, please. Let's see, one more thing about 5G, I might kill somebody.
There's so much to unpack there. First of all, sellout gets what sellout gets. The Verizon guy left for Sprint. Now watch what happened.
Fuck around and find out.
We've been following that saga for a decade. And hey, man, Sprint went the way of Radio Shack.
Hey, man, Radio Shack was good, though.
No Circuit City.
Oh, man, those new days. I used to walk there all the time.
Just gonna need it.
Shouted right there. Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face. We are an irreverent podcast about music news and music culture that mostly matters. I am Sean.
I am Dan.
And welcome to the first official episode of Audio Face of the year. It's episode 216.
Episode 216 of the new season of Audio Face.
Yes. Strap yourselves in. We got a doozy for you. We've got three records that we'll be talking about. We have Change the Show by Miles Kane. We have The Overload by Yard Act. And we have Colors by Young Boy Never Broke Again, also maybe Never Free Again. Who knows what the feds are up to today? And we got plenty of stories sprinkling in all that jazz, per usual. But yeah, yes. Dan, how have you been?
I've been really good. I've been trying to get refreshed for the new year. For folks who don't know from last year, of course, we started like a membership platform at Syndicate 23. I'll be talking about that substantially a lot more over through the past year and things to come. And one thing that we're going to be doing this year that's going to be extra fun is that we're finally listening to the audience. I mean, we've always listened to the audience, but the biggest thing is, can you review more albums? We are putting ourselves with the gauntlet and we are reviewing more albums. This week for members, you're going to get four other album reviews, including ones we missed from earlier this month: FKA Twigs, Earl Sweatshirt, Corday, and Bonobo. And it's just going to be nothing but albums. Members are going to be getting stuff earlier, exclusively, more often this year. They'll also get access to the back catalog of Audio Face episodes, so that'll be really fun. And yeah, I'm really excited for this year and all the stuff we've got going on. No singles this week, because as we're doing this ramp up, we have a lot of music in our brains that we cannot wait to regurgitate to you all. Mm-hmm. But with that, we've got a docket of news, shall we? And so this one, I will say before we get into this, it is very fun being back, because the stories that we have here that are kind of set up is just such a classic selection of things we would talk about on the podcast. In addition to great music, of course, we're going to talk about news stories that I think people will care about as they relate to music. And this one is like a just perfect Audio Face story right here. So let's jump in.
Yeah. So quite a few music fans, they brought up on various social media platforms, some owned by the Chinese government, that the When We Were Young festival could be very similar to a Firefest 2.0. Going in, it's kind of like almost like a scene style festival, because you have MCR, Paramore, Day to Remember, Avril Lavigne, Jimmy Eat World, etc. So a lot of like scene, emo scene and all that stuff, which would actually be pretty cool for a festival. But what is quite a few people have noted is that there are roughly 65 bands that are committed to the festival, 12 hours during the festival day, and there's only three stages. So if you do the math, basically you're like a little over half hour per stage if you give them a tiny bit of time to set down, like to set up and to break down all their stuff, which normally takes a long ass time. So basically it looks like a giant mess, logistical mess in that regard, because there's not enough stuff. And that's going to be in Las Vegas, Viva Las Vegas, in October. So only three stages, that's not a lot for 65 bands. Like, that's barely anything.
And it's one day also. It's worth mentioning. This is a one-day festival. And yes, it's definitely nostalgia bait. You have a good amount of new artists too. I see the Linda Lindas. We see
Linda Lindas,
Audio Face Award winners Wolf Alice are there. So it's looking like Listen, this little scene Dan here is like really excited for the concept of this festival. I really enjoy this. I think a lot of people who like associate,
yeah, that'd be cool.
The, yeah, associate a lot of their like musical upbringing with this era of music. It
and
would
it's
be really
sold out
cool.
And tickets were about like $300. So there's a lot of money for it, but it could end up being like an absolute disaster if the logistics aren't done well, because especially if you only have three stages, like there really isn't much for a 1 day event. Like if it's over 3 days or something, then fine. Still not great, but it's doable. But over one.
And is it worth mentioning? It's worth mentioning that in this presumably chaotic 1 day event with all of these different artists playing. Yeah, I think you said the number was 65 bands in 12 hours.
Yes.
This beautiful production is being run by Live Nation of Travis Scott Astroworld fame. So
never forget, never change.
So, and while the point has been made that Travis Scott has gotten a lot of heat for a lot of the public heat, I think, for what happened at Astroworld, ultimately, a lot of that comes down to what we talked about last year on the podcast. A lot of the blame is distributed. Travis Scott certainly shares in some of it for just sort of like the vibe he has at his concerts sometimes, but it was a whole chain of production of things that didn't go well. That being said, this is capitalism, baby. So there are only a couple of major companies who can pull these kinds of events off. I think Golden Voice is one that's popular. Live Nation, you have the folks behind EDC, Insomniac. There's a couple of few other like offshoot smaller ones in certain genres there. And you have smaller regional production groups like this working. But ultimately, you really don't have that much. And so this is looking to be a mess. A lot of people, we were talking about, it was a person on TikTok who kind of did the math on all of this. And usually breakdown setup takes like an hour for each show. And it gives them about half an hour to do set down and break up. So unless they have one of those rotating stages type deals, then even then it would be a mess. Also, you wouldn't even have. You're taking about 33 minutes to get these stages set up and ready, but that means 33 minutes for the bands to play as well, right? So
like that's just not enough time.
In no context is anyone going to accept seeing 30 minutes of a headliner.
No.
In no context.
No, there's no way.
Even at a festival.
It's very, very, very poorly planned. I mean, we'll keep you up to date if anything changes on it. I mean, I would be surprised if they don't add at least another stage or even add another day to that. That's crazy, though. With that many people on 1 day, it's a big ask.
Yeah, I super don't think it's going to work out well, but
no.
Once again, we report, you decide.
Exactly.
So,
I feel like Rosa Parks on this next story, so.
Sean, are you pushing P?
I'm pushing P, pushing P.
Gunna has been doing nothing but pushing P over the past month as he's been pushing his album release. And part of the funny thing is like there's a song on there called Pushing P with Young Thug. And it's one of those cases where a trap artist invents a term and then has to go explain that term and then like can't explain that term. This happened when Migos last year released Straightening. And then like none of the Migos Offset could explain like what Straightening was. They're like, no, you don't understand. Like, it don't get straightening until you do the straightening, right? So you're doing the straightening with the straightening. And so a similar
thing. There are known knowns and there are unknown unknowns. And then there are unknown unknowns. Things that we know that we don't know.
So there are a bunch of different instances now with Gunna where he's going on different shows trying to explain what push and pee is. And I think the idea that we've landed on is that it's like peace or like prosperity or like, you know, the things that rappers talk about. Maybe it's money, maybe it's fame or whatever, but like you're pushing like positivity, positive energy or whatever out there. But this just became easily memeable because again, we were on this press tour with Gunna and he was on the Breakfast Club and he was talking about an instance in which he felt like he was Rosa Parks. And so the context of Rosa Parks is, of course, standing her ground on a bus to stand up for civil rights. The context for Gunna is being almost kicked off of a private jet for acting like a buffoon because he wanted to eat and couldn't wait like 5 or 10 minutes, or couldn't just like let the plane sit or whatever. Nevertheless, we've got to show you this video because it's just so good.
Oh, Christ.
Let me get it loaded and started. And then
cue it up, baby.
Yep. Hear computer sound. Seeing that?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let me get OBS running and let's go.
I see that dumb hoodie.
I'm looking for the figure looking ones at. All right,
all right.
Man, they talking about they ain't made it and got none. Now the pilot talking about, man, someone that disrespected my colleagues. I'm like, who? Man, everybody got off the plane.
What?
Man, no. Felt like Rosa Parks. No. I ain't moving. Stayed on there till the police came. They couldn't really even get it.
I made a mistake. I didn't take it. I was just having our faces run through it, so I have to play it again. Sorry.
That's fine. The more the merrier.
Okay. I'm looking for the figure looking ones at. All right,
all right.
They talking about they ain't made it and got none. Now the pilot talking about, man, someone that disrespected my colleagues. I'm like, who? Man, everybody got off the plane.
What?
Man, no. Felt like Rosa Parks. No. I ain't moving. Stayed on there till the police came. They couldn't really even get us off the plane because he didn't have a real reason. We like, well, what he said? Well, he said, I don't know. Talk to her. I'm like, man, what? I'm like, man, who disrespects you? She like, I don't want to talk about it. I just don't want to talk about it.
So, again, there's issues on planes all the time. People are belligerent, especially like during COVID. And there's racial stuff that happens all the time. This was not one of those cases. The part that we didn't play was a 3-minute diatribe of Gunna basically talking about how he was trying to get on a plane and he wanted to eat on the plane first. And usually they don't let you eat during like takeoff because like you're going at 500 miles an hour, like, or not exactly at that point when you're taking off, as I have the pilot here, right? But you are going at a high speed. You don't want like food flinging around and stuff. Like, wait until you're at least at cruising altitude a little bit and then you can eat. You're on a private jet, dude. Like, what the hell?
Yep.
Yeah, well, that was just one of the more ridiculous things I had
just hilarious.
Seen in a while.
It's really, really funny. Like, I'm Rosa Parks. I want to sit here and say no until the police came. I'm like, on a private jet. Okay. Rich people being rich people, man, at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's so true. Even though Gunna is black, he is, like, just showing his ass as, like, being woefully disconnected from the plight that Rosa Parks was even talking about in this case, let alone, you know, any kind of like class disparity or whatever.
At least Kodak Black was in Florida, but more on that later. Speaking of entitled rich people going crazy, we've got a new segment of Westworld. Which one? And Jesus Christ.
Where do we start?
As Vanessa was saying yesterday, she literally went up to me. She goes, I think Kanye is like actually losing it this time. Like, he might be like going down with the ship. And I go, I mean, I've been saying that for years, but this one's a whole new level.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even want to throw this in there because honestly, even for as lowbrow as audio face can be sometimes, especially Westworld, this one just felt gross. But there was this whole saga where Kanye was trying to go to his daughter's birthday party, and apparently it was like Kim wasn't giving the address or like whatever, he wasn't able to go or something like that. And so Kanye posts this video on social media about like, from his like car seat, all like conservative vlogger style, going like, listen, I'm being kept away from my children. I won't be kept away from my family like this. Like, super divorced dad vibes. Apparently, Travis Scott gave him the address and he was able to see the kids, and that all went well. But he's where we're going through another cycle of Kanye West and his like crazy antics again. And this time, there's no Kim Kardashian to save him. He's got the spiraling divorced dad energy kind of going on right now. And he did that whole thing with Julia Fox as like a photo shoot thing. Literally just like for an attention grabbing moment, more or less. He's just like on one. And so part of this on one thing is Kanye apparently punching someone who wanted his autograph in the face and the neck, and then throwing him down in downtown LA just earlier, a couple weeks ago in early January. And yeah, you have a woman who's desperately trying to calm him down, And mm-hmm. but Kanye just sort of storms away in anger. And like, it usually as a celebrity, you kind of have to understand, like, listen, you're going to be annoyed a lot, but you have to be smarter about these things. A, because like, if you act in this way, then you just become a target. And yep. B, there's nothing productive, because you will just become more of a story if you try to make it a bigger deal what it is. Just say, hey, not now. Listen, I'm going home. It's like 3 a.m. in downtown LA. Like, this is weird. Like, please get away from me. Shout out to Kanye West security detail out here. But overall, that's just like a bad thing. Meanwhile, you also had earlier this month, again, another thing I'm just not going to go into for a number of different reasons, but Kanye West and the Game, minefields, Kanye West and the Game did a single called Easy, and there are a lot of things in there. A lot of it are just like these really weird bars from Kanye West where he just doesn't really sound mature, one of which is meant to be like a Pete Davidson diss that's like... like, okay. Kanye, it wasn't really that good. And Kanye, please don't make me a fan of Pete Davidson. Like, just chill. Thing that Pete Davidson did in Saturday Night Live, that was less of like anything funny, because nothing on Saturday Night Live is really funny except for Michael Che and occasionally Colin Jost. It was a part where Pete Davidson was like, make Kanye 2006 again. That whole thing where Pete Davidson on SNL was like, this was when Kanye was doing the slavery was a choice thing on TMZ. Audioface is old enough to where we were doing the podcast back then. And Pete Davidson did the SNL skit and he was like, listen, I have mental health issues, Kanye, but like doing this in public is not good for anyone. So you need to be a little bit smarter than this. It was actually not a funny thing. It was meant to be like a serious moment.
Yeah, serious. Yeah.
And once again, it's weird, but Pete Davidson in the past is looking like the bigger person here. And I don't give a shit about any of them, like, or either of them really, right? Like, but Kanye West is continuing to do what he did in the Drake beef, essentially, which is helping Drake win, because you're acting like a fool and all the other person has to do is just go, listen, I'm sorry for that man. He's like acting out and doing his own thing, but I'm going to like do my own thing over here. Just like, don't mind that. But
yeah, it's Westworld. It's Westworld in a nutshell, basically. Like, he's just going crazy with everything right now, especially with after the divorce, it's just gone. He's going off the deep end. But the whole birthday party situation, all of this.
He had a skinned monkey as the cover for Easy, by the way. And so that was also the Pete Davidson stuff. That was just the diss. But the main thing was that, yeah, there was a skinned monkey as the cover. A lot of places had to censor the cover because it was pretty.
It's pretty bad. Yeah. Not gonna lie. It's pretty out there.
It's really rough. It's very red and raw, let's say, not to be too graphic about it. But PETA came out with a tweet, of course, saying hashtag inspeciesism, this disturbing image of a skinned monkey that Kanye West shares serves as a reminder that there's no difference between human and other animals. Their lives aren't easy when we abuse and kill them for food, experiments, clothing, or entertainment. And PETA's largely just like all very much, like a little bit too much all the time. But I think we can also kind of look here and go, like, there's no, what was the purpose, like, what was the benefit of having this like shock image of a skinned animal? Like, you tortured that animal, obviously. Mm-hmm. It's again, there's very little to support Kanye West for, even in the whole, oh well, I like his music or his music's fine, like I'm gonna see him live at Coachella apparently, and like there's gonna be a bunch of people who are going, oh, this is the greatest musician of our time, oh, he's a genius, oh, he's amazing. No, he's going through mental health episodes. The best music he's made is way past his time, and someone needs to get help for Kanye West. That being said, that someone's going to be Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, apparently, Kanye's strategic advisor probably has connections with Vladimir Putin and Tinkoff Bank. Says that Russia will be a second home for business ventures and Sunday service performances. So then he ends up meeting Vladimir Putin. And yeah, it's trying to set up some business stuff in Russia, which is very interesting.
Yeah, apparently there's like an Azerbaijani real estate developer's son, along with Kanye West and some others who are acting as like these liaisons with Kanye and the Russian president. But apparently, a representative for Kanye saying that said that the story was false, entirely fabricated, a work of fiction, and wishful thinking from these Russian people. So it's very curious how these things work. We'll see. It was reported by Billboard and a number of other places, so we will see how that goes. But can we really put it outside the realm of Kanye West at this point? I really don't know.
Mm-mm. We report, you decide. But moving on, we have our first album review of the day. We have Colors by Yungboy Never Broke Again. Well, this is deluxe on Spotify, so I think the normal is a little bit shorter, but it's 20 songs, hour, 6 minutes for the deluxe. I believe it's a little bit shorter for the normal one. But yeah, we reviewed his 2020 album, I believe. I could see the album cover. I just can't think of top.
Yes.
And thought it was okay. It's just really, really, really long. And there's some decent stuff in there, but the whole Yungboy Never Free Again saga that happened last year, which was insane / hilarious at the same time, of the feds trying to arrest him, above that. So there's lots of things that have gone on. He released some more stuff here or there, but it's a trap artist, so they release music every 3 minutes, so it's something special. But I want to go in on this record.
Yeah, we reviewed that. That's more or less the good overview. He has a really loyal fan base who just does nothing but comment on music pages by going, regardless of what the situation or the conversation is, why be better? Why be better? Why be better? Why be better? And like I've told you, I'm gonna be a warpath on trap this year because it's a very repetitive genre and artists are able to get away a lot with the repetition and they're rewarded just by having a large output as opposed to quality. And Yungboy NBA, I think, in the past 2 years has released like 6 albums. And so there's definitely a lot of quantity there. Quality is above average for like trap artists. Definitely like lyrically there. It's not like he's repeating lyrics more or less. There's like a lot of things he's got to say and he's like very like lyrically dense in there. It's not necessarily really like heady or like woke stuff. It's just sort of like regular trapping degeneracy, but even then not the same kind of trapping degeneracy that's almost like enjoyable from afar like Chief Keef was. It's not bland like Gunna, but I feel like while you do have some songs that hit here for a little bit, you mostly have noise. Like nothing really stands out, nothing really sort of like performs well on its own. A couple songs like Nice in here and go, okay, Yungboy is a better than average, but like every 3 months or every 4 or 5 months, NBA Yungboy puts like these 20 song albums out that are like an hour long with these like 5-6 minute tracks in it. Also,
song record getting measly 100,000.
Like it's, and
it, yeah, I mean,
it's overwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, as much as we think J. Cole should have already had a note a little bitch by this point, it's insane that Jermaine hasn't, but, with all that being said, yeah, it's, I think the big problem with all these trap artists is they just pump out so much material that you have to sift through it. Unless you are like a mega fan of their music and you know a lot of their stuff, there's just so much that is out that you can't really enjoy it because you're like, where do I go? Where do I start? Where do I go? Okay, they already have 3 records out in 2021. Like, what the fuck's going on? They have one out right now in 22. You're like, Jesus, what do I listen to? Like, what is good? What is not good? And all of that. And when you go through the record, it's not horrible. It's, you know, 3.6 Gronkin. It's not great. It's not horrifying. We've had a lot of good trap and we've had a lot of like, I don't want to listen to this trap like St. John, which is going to be our deathbeds of that record, his music in general's ass. YB's is okay. It isn't anything special, but it's not, for the amount of music that you put out, it does, there isn't too much deviation between records enough for me. I guess supposed to be listening to a lot of music. You always want to like try something different. You want to at least evolve with your sound over time. You want to evolve between album to album, but like compared to albums that we've talked about, even albums that we haven't talked about much, you got like Nobody's Safe, you have Top, like compared to those records, they're relatively similar, relatively the same compared to a record now that's 2 years removed. And it's just, yeah.
Yeah. Getting into the album itself, start with songs like Long Live, Bring It On, which are young boy NBA's characteristic sort of like yelling style of rap that also has a little bit of, you know, trap and B kind of flares in it, because he's doing a little bit of singing and wailing in it. You see some versatility there. Yes. Know the police on me, they know that they can't clone me. Shawty say she on me, know that I got money. Say that they don't like me, cause I'm always stunting. Yeah. No, for a fact, soon as he like that, I'm gon' stretch him. This ain't no Hellcat, nigga, this a kitchen. Don't talk that shit, they must don't want him. Draco gon' neglect him. Them baptized right there on that corner. They know who the fuck
tell blessing. Tell bring it on, let's get it. Oh.
And then, like, it's fine and Bring It On. I think a good combination of this is in DC Marvel with a little bit of like an DC Uzi Vert, a little bit of an Uzi Vert-ish beat, but nevertheless, I think you get the rhythmic nature of the way NBA raps, the way that he can rap his way around lyrics and make it sound not fresh, or make it sound fresh and non-repetitive. You get that shining there. I think the fact that the album sort of like starts at a high level and sort of continues to sort of flatline after that, there's no range, there's no up or down, and the downs are kind of all packed near the end of the record. You get things like, and Gangsta with Quando, my monitor's shorter, but Quando Rondo, I also thought that one was good. Youngboy NBA doesn't really do a lot of features on his record. That was the one feature, and I felt that was really solid. She fuck with the ops, she cannot be my babe. Got a man, they want they beam on top of diamond on my face, huh? Everybody I speak about, they know I ain't lying, I ain't never capped out. Get my brother slain and I ain't even be dying, they say I fleshed off. I'm too ahead of my time, I'm overdue, that's what they hate me for. I ain't scared, know that I could die, you could get it too. Niggas want my soul, get them gone, I'm gonna stay inside. But you get to songs like Emo Rockstar, Emo Love, Snow Bunny, Foolish Figure. And not only were these songs Youngboy NBA trying to do his singing, kind of slower, break it down kind of vibe, it became this sort of malaise in the latter half of the album. It just sort of like began to blur together in an even worse way than the earlier half of the album blurred together. Again, I'm kind of like what Sean is saying here. I'm looking for some distinction between the albums. I'm looking for some reason for like why you put out this project, why it has
exactly
meaning.
That's a big thing I think we need to go in and hold these, a lot of the trap artists accountable. Why are you making this? What is the point of this record? Like, why are you making... what is your thought process of making this? Is it just thrown together for like industry purposes? Is it like you want to get out of a, these could be things too, where you want to get out of a record label possibly, and you just have to get pump out these records as fast as you can. Because like, hey, I have a 7 record thing, you know, and I want to get out of it. Hey, more power to you. I will say that, and I will like judge it by that standard. That's okay. Or if these things, if I want to make money, be like, which is most of it, you'd be like, okay, that's fair. Or other ones where they're like, hey, I have a lot of stories to tell, this or that. I'm trying to experiment on the sound. Or you have a lot of artists, you know, like Vince Staples and others that are released a lot of shorter albums, or I'll sweatshirt more on that later. Kind of releasing these shorter albums and stuff because there we go. I don't want to throw out the whole sound because it won't necessarily make sense, but I'm trying to get these out because I want you to hear it, because there's some interesting ideas that I have, and so on and so forth. So there's so many things that need to go on, but people need to be held accountable of why are you making these? What is the point?
Yeah, or at least, at bare minimum, it can be a collaboration. Like, hey, it's a duo. Like, I think Youngboy NBA did a thing with Rich the Kid, and it's like, okay, we're going to do this two album thing together. Like, some of the best trap albums that have come out, period, are those kinds of
Look like Metro Boomin and 21 collaborations. You have Without Warning, which is still one of my favorite trap albums, and that's a couple of different artists on there, and it's great. Like, you can get those ones that are fantastic when you have collaboration records. But then if you're doing solo ones like this and just pumping them out 24/7, like, why? There's no need for that. Take your time.
Yeah. So there's a lot of talent here. There's like lightning in a bottle, I think, with Youngboy NBA. But like, he's got to focus himself to 10 songs. He's got to have some intentionality with the albums he's creating. And he's got to challenge himself and his producers to make some different flows, make some different beats, not just let's copy our namesake T-Pain here. Do something else. We already hear that other people are doing it. Do something different. Arbitrary scale this week. We do arbitrary scales every week on Audio Face because ranking systems are dumb. If we gave it a number system or whatever system, all you would do is come back to, you didn't start cross-referencing reviews and going, oh, well, why'd you give this to this when this is this, when obviously we all know that Y be better. So no, we're going to give you cards, you children. Like, we're in elementary school and your elementary school teacher has to discipline the 20 of you. We're in America in 2022. The 45 of you idiots that are in a classroom.
Thank you.
virtually. Semi-hybrid because half of your parents are anti-vaxxers. So anyways, red, yellow, green cards. Green means you're having good performance. Your performance has been good today. Yellow means, we're kind of going into trouble. And then red means you might lose your recess privileges. So it's a really simple scale.
Yeah, this is a yellow card.
Black. Yeah.
Like, she's not reaching the back pocket to give you a red and send you out of the class, like one game suspension. It's not a straight red. Like, you didn't slide tackle a dude behind in the box and get a penalty shot against, but it's definitely a yellow card. Like, it's a warning.
It's not a flagrant foul. Like, you throwing the ball at someone's head.
It's not a Manuel Neuer 2014 World Cup where he gets out the box and punches what's his face in the head. I don't know if that was on purpose or on accident, but I'll still take that forever.
Can't beat the classics.
Nope.
So we were going to continue more Audio Face in a moment, but just want to remind you that you can help grow Audio Face by following us at Audio Face Pod on Twitter or Instagram, and make sure you subscribe to us at youtube.com/audiofacepod as well, so that you can hate more of our videos or like more of our videos, whatever you want. That's all there. Also, check out the most recent episode of Power Report. It's my political podcast that I do. If you thought this podcast wasn't political enough, on the most recent episode, I'm basically spending, it's a shorter one, but I'm spending pretty much all of it going in on Chuck Schumer. I have a whole selection of quotes from empty promises that Chuck Schumer made well-meaning liberals last year. And I'm going to go through all the ones that were broken, all the things Joe Biden didn't do, and ultimately kind of a test of how we should, why it's an example of how we should approach the Democratic Party. Because again, people for whatever reason say, oh, you go so hard on the Republicans, Dan. Why don't you talk about the Democrats? Do you know me? So yes, Power Report, youtube.com.
Have you not listened to Audio Face and half of our fucking arbitrary scales? We had Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema as donors as our damn arbitrary scales. That was just recently too.
Yeah, listen, a lot of people don't actually listen to Audio Face, and it gets rough for them. Let's just say that. youtube.com/danfromtheinternet for all of those things. And with that, we will get on to more news and more album reviews.
Yeah, so moving on to Landmine Island, we have very interesting story. So Morgan Wallen, everybody's favorite mullet wearer, made a surprise appearance at the MLK Freedom Fest. So kind of giving a background on Morgan Wallen. So Morgan Wallen is the country artist who is award-winning country artist on Audio Face for the beautiful award of the Hard R Award. Why? Because he literally dropped a Hard R on camera. It is there for you folks in February of last year. Dropped it. He had some girth to it. He had some garbo to that R. Like, it was a pretty good R, I'm not gonna lie.
There's some bass in his voice.
There's some bass. Ooh, look who got some bass in his voice now.
if we're scoring like the use of racial slurs, like you know, on the blockchain, so it's verified and that can't be stolen. You know, you like hold up a thing and give it like a 6 or 7 out of 10. It's like good form, but you know, we could improve maybe. Not quite Olympic level.
Because you got to rotate your racial slurs sometimes, you know. more on that later. So, anyways, he you made a surprise appearance at Nashville's MLK Freedom Fest, Nashville, you know, the home of, I'm not going to say that, landmines, Jesus Christ. Anyways, but he joined Lil Durk for a performance of their collaborative single, Broadway Girls.
That's the reason why Morgan Wallen was at the MLK Freedom Fest, because a guy who was caught on camera drunkenly yelling at someone he was pissed at, saying to take care of this pussy ass N word.
It should be P word ass N word. Ben Shapiro.
Ben Shapiro just says P word, A word. And he just says it. P word, A word. You can hear it in his nasally voice too. Anyways. But yeah, Lil Durk has taken it upon himself as a rapper, of course, to defend bringing Morgan Wallen to the MLK Freedom Fest. Even going so far as to encourage people like Kendrick Lamar to work with him. Durk said, my boy, he ain't no racist. That's my boy. We had a long talk. He had this public situation. I vouch for him and he good. He ain't canceled. I talked to him. When I say you ain't canceled, you ain't canceled. And so that's cool, Lil Durk, that you had a nice little conversation with Morgan Wallen and you think he's not a racist. But nigga, who the fuck do you think you are? Like, you're actual country music stars. They're actual women in country music who are black women who have, like, gone about her saying, being in country music sucks. It fucking sucks because you're constantly bombarded with your supposed fans being racist towards you, being condescending towards you. It's, like, miserable to be black in country music, to be a person of color in country music. So that's why so few people do it. And so an issue and thing, and I have to repeat myself so often because people keep wanting smoke on this. It's not wanting Morgan Wallen's career to be over because he made some mistake, right? No, it's about actually getting accountability. And so apparently Morgan Wallen tossed some money to some organizations here and sat in some meetings there, and you know, he wasn't able to go to some music festivals and shows and whatnot. But throughout the entire time, his image was being massaged. It was, oh no, you see, he's just this nice boy wearing a suit. And he's like on Good Morning America saying he would never know how deeply wrong and how bad that word is and how hurtful it was. And he's sorry he used it because he didn't understand the history. As though we were supposed to believe that bullshit. What you should have had is Morgan Wallen, like, Morgan Wallen actually being held accountable for and going like, why'd you use that word? Why'd you feel comfortable to use that word that we know you know about? This is the South. This is country music. This is America. We know you know it. And maybe start talking to black people in country music and going like, why is it that Morgan Wallen gets a pass for these things when they're black artists trying to like get a chance for it? Mm-hmm. And they have to overcome the fact that they are in a subgenre of music that doesn't care that they are, like, certain members of that said genre are seen as less people
exactly.
than other members of that subgenre. It's something that, like, pretty much doesn't happen anywhere else in music, and it's maddening that Lil Durk has decided to step his dumbass in this here, in somewhere that is not his business, saying that, oh, here's my black card, and I'm going to use it on Morgan Wallen? You dumbass! What the fuck?
Seriously,
like, Lil Durk is a fucking coon. Like I haven't used that since Kendrick Lamar defended XXXTentacion. But what the fuck are you doing, brother?
Seriously, hey, brother.
God. Oh. And throwing Kendrick Lamar in there. Kendrick Lamar should snap you just for that. Fucking dumbass.
It's insulting to say the least, is my
absolutely
opinion.
Fucking
it's like you have so many other options. Like, if you even know music at all, like, there are so many people you could bring on there. And you chose him. Fucking clout chasers. Jesus Christ. I hate this country.
Literally all it is. Because Morgan Wallen was one of the top musicians, period, last year.
Exactly.
Not just in country music, period. And so Lil Durk wanted those streams. Lil Durk wanted that crossover. And he didn't care that behind Lil Durk's back, Morgan Wallen still saying the N-word, probably about him. So, fucking great job, dude. Figure it the fuck out, Lil Durk, you piece of...
Figure it out.
You dipshit. Oh my God, I can't go in more about like how small of a brain that Lil Durk has. Like, fucking go home and rethink your life.
Smooth. Oh, wow, shit. All right, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Also, definitely nominated for the Hard R Award, like, already.
I'm nominating Lil Durk for the... I'm nominating Lil Durk.
Like, it's like when you have the sorting hat in and Harry Potter, and it's before it touches Malfoy, it just goes Slytherin before it even goes on, and it's like, Hard R! Like, automatically. But also, who's also
getting nominated... And fuck J.K. Rowling and her ugly turf ass anyways.
And
looks like Ann Coulter and a mop had a baby. Anyways, let's go on to the next story.
Let's get on to the next award, too, as well. The nominee up for the infamous From Dusk Till Dawn. Welcome to the crib, From Dusk Till Dawn, Vic Mensa. He was arrested at Dulles International Airport.
Dulles.
On Saturday. Dulles.
That's one of the DC ones.
That's one of the DCs. One of the many DCs. That you will not be able to fly ILS 2 or ILS 3 approach in about a week and a half if those things get passed by the FCC, but more on that later.
Hashtag no 5G.
Hashtag this extreme no 5G. Don't let it happen. Anyways, he was found, allegedly, he was found to be in possession of mushrooms, LSD, and other psychedelic drugs. And his mugshot. Look, Miley Cyrus on, and I fell in love. His picture is just beautiful. It's just like
they discovered 41 grams of LSD, 124 grams of psilocybin capsules, 178 grams of psilocybin gummies, and 6 grams of psilocybin mushrooms concealed inside Mensa's luggage. And that's the face I would have if I got busted with all that shit too.
That's a lot.
Bro,
that's good for summer flights.
Bro, yeah, I was gonna say, with all that stuff, you don't need a plane, dog. You're good. You're gonna fly to wherever you need to be, brother.
You want to go to West Virginia? You're good. You want to go to Somalia? You there right now, man?
Where's your flight to Chicago? No, space. Space. Mercury, straight eyes. Like, same eyes as the mugshot, just going, I'm going to Mars.
I'm at Jupiter right now. You're like, it's like, I'm falling through that gas giant right now, man. I'm seeing hurricanes everywhere, dude. It's incredible. You want to come along? You're like, maybe on like Thursday. I think I'm free then.
Yeah, not today, Vic. But when you get the chance, please clear the dishes off the table. Thank you. Talk to you later. Bye, Vic.
Don't stay on flowers too much. Also, because we got to have the NFG segment here on Audio Face, because that's what we do now. We're an NFG's podcast. Ozzy Osbourne, known bat eater. Literally, that happened on stage. It's actually, that's hilarious. That's right. He literally made NFTs about crypto bats. That's funny. His crypto bat NFT was hit by a scam that scammed users out of thousands and thousands of dollars worth of Bitcoin, and it is hilarious. Apparently, they shared a link that was turned into a scam site, because that's what happens on the blockchain, baby. Freedom. Free market of ideas. Capitalism, baby, at its finest. Apparently, they made 9,666, of course, unique digital bats, and they popped onto a site, whatever, they released it, but somebody hacked the link naturally, because that's what you can do, and turned into a scam to just funnel them more money, and they didn't have that happen. So, which is hilarious, to say the least. I just love all of these fucking incel dudes that change their profile pictures to their NFT.
I love all the people who are like, and I can't believe that people are making fun of me online for, like, reverse mortgaging my house in order to buy this NFT. We live in dumb times. We live in bubblicious times. And
we really do.
Anytime the NFT people show their asses, I will be talking about it on Audio Face, especially if it's music related. Stay tuned for PowerPort as well, because I'm going to do a deep dive into crypto. I'm going to try to do a reset of it, because I do think the technologies behind these things could have uses. These are not the uses.
I mean, we talked about it a long time ago before fucking Bitcoin nerds got it. About what are the things that could happen with NFTs. Are like, hey, it could be really good for artists. It could be cool for things for, like, release limited music or something to, like, generate revenue in that way. It'll be kind of cool, but also maybe it could be used to get abused by some systems because, you know, that's what happens in the free market. And the latter happened, and we are here now, and welcome to the metaverse.
I got like a hangover just hearing you say that. That was powerful.
Powerful Sean Torres.
please give me the warm embrace of some music. Let's talk about some music.
Let's talk about some crunchy tunes. So we got Change the Show by Miles Kane. 11 songs, 36 minutes long. His first record since 2018's Coup de Grâce, which we did talk about on this podcast as well. Miles Kane, known for his solo work, also for his duo band with noted also Brit of Crispy Tunes, Alex Turner of The Last Shadow Puppets, which is one of my favorite collaborative bands ever made. They are so good with those two records, and they will be making another one at some point, but they both are releasing records this year. As Arctic Monkeys will release a record this year, and also Miles Kane's this year. So one day we'll get another Last Shadow Puppets album. When? I don't know, but I will be there when that happens. Anyways, going on, I remember we reviewed Coup de Grâce 18. I thought it was okay, but I thought it was a little bland for Miles Kane, especially because he has a pretty decent range within his musicality and has a ton of influences. And you hear that in this record, and he has such a big step forward in this record. I really, really enjoyed it. We talked about Don't Let It Get You Down as a single. Now in the context of the record, fucking love it. It's like a mix between like 60s rock inspired, 70s rock inspired, Motown horns, and all these other things kind of jumped into a record of him basically moving from LA back to England a few years ago and kind of like going back home in that way and going back to, you know, not having all the stresses and having joy in his life again, which he really didn't have that much because, you know, LA can suck the life out of some folks, which I understand. And
LA.
Tacos are better in LA. and it's a really good, it's quite a good album. His voice just is incredible as always, but just with the musicality of this one, it's really nice to hear a very upbeat rock record because a lot of the rock records we've been getting have been more toned down, a lot of really like kind of depressing different genres, different subject matters and stuff, which, you know, we are called Audio Face or Planned Radiohead. Depression is my fucking life, so I love it. And give me some more Stanley Donwood drawings of like the war in Yugoslavia and shit in 94, like inject that into my veins. But it's nice to have a record that is on the nose, especially within rock, and Change the Show is that. But getting to the musicality of it, the first two tracks, Tears Are Falling. Like, actually, Tears Are Falling is an interesting choice for a track to open with. And like, if I ever interviewed Miles Kane, I would ask him, why did you start with Tears Are Falling as your to open the record on? Because it's a little bit of a slower song to get you in. And that's honestly the only misstep in this record for me, is that placement of the opening track. It's a fantastic track. Don't get me wrong. I really like it. It's a really nice kind of piano ballad with really undersoded guitar and drums and his voice, a really crispy sound. Like, it's good, like really 60s throwback vibes. But in the context of a record, like the beginning track, it just, like, that's interesting. That's an interesting start for the record. And then the second track, Don't Let It Get You Down, just boom, it gets you into it. You have some really fun drum beats. You have a really nice brass ensemble in the background. That gets a fantastic rock song. Honestly, one of the favorite rock songs we've done in this podcast for a long time. Like, I've listened to this track a lot. Not just because I'm a Miles Kane fan, but just because it's genuinely good.
Yeah, it's an undeniably catchy track. And that's exactly what a lot of the songs on here are. I think yeah, you get past what some may see as like, oh, this is almost like too optimistic. Like, ah, the sun, this is, close the blinds, damn it. But yeah. What you might lose for that if you're looking at this album is, oh, it's too poppy sounding. It's too like optimistic sounding, which I think could be like criticisms of it. You're missing all the musical influences, all the like old school things are being thrown in there at once to kind of create this thing that, oh, why is this sound kind of poppy and like overly optimistic and like played before? Because this was so much of music for an era of time. And so
That
callback kind of context, it very simple structures that like end in like music that end very nicely, like dun, 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 like having nice finality to them. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of those through here. But definitely, because transparently, this was the album of the selection this week that I listened to the least, but still gotten like a good amount of listens to it. Going back, I did feel like Tears Are Falling should have been the second to last song on the album.
Yes,
I think the last song, not to jump ahead too much, does a good balance of being
great,
upbeat. Being upbeat, but still ending the album really nicely and being really memorable. Like, I really expected more to come after that song. I was almost a little bit upset, but like, that's a great ender. I would have put Tears Are Falling just before that because I like the intro to it for the album of the song, but everything else just paces it too slow for what you were saying, Sean, is a really upbeat project.
Exactly. And like, example, if you put Don't let it get you down, and Nothing's Ever Going to Be Enough, which is also a fantastic track Miles Kane, I think, is at his best when he has someone to go off of. When he has that duet going, it is incredible. I get myself into some sticky situations, relationship consultations, convoluted adaptations as well. Green Bailey Ray on that track, and they're kind of going back and forth is really, really nice. I love it. I love their both their voices. It's unique in that way where Miles can really adapt to whoever he's with, whoever he's featuring on for a record, whoever is featuring on his own records. He can really adapt and change and make it to where his art form is still there on the track. He's not going to put too much of his own flair on it, but it will always adapt to whatever project it is. And that's something that I like. But if you put Tears Are Falling Down and you had to Let It Get You Down, Nothing Is Ever Going to Be Enough as your one and two, that's like a perfect album opener. But that's just us being really nitpicky music critics or so. But anyways, really like Nothing Is Going to Be Good Enough. You have kind of the middle of the record with See You When I See You, Never Get Tired of Dancing, which is also another fantastic track. You get these really cool Motown and Fees beats with older rock and then trying to modernize it all into it. So it's very unique in that way. And I also compared to Coupe de Gras, because I think Coupe de Gras was very stale in the way it sounded. I was a bit disappointed in that. This is the way of like, oh, wow, I can see some ideas he had even in Everything You Come to Expect, the last Shadow Puppets record in 2016. Some of those tracks, like Aviation and a few others, where I can hear some of those ideas, but they weren't really fashioned out in a way. Also, because it's a band, so it's totally different. I can get some of those sounds onto here now with Nothing Is Ever Is Going to Be Good Enough, Never Get Tired of Dancing, Coming of Age, Change the Show, so on. Those tracks, I can see, oh, wow, that took a long time for him to make. But in the context of that, I like that way you let those things marinate. You know, I'm going to let that marinate for you. It took 6 years on some of that sound, but I can hear those influences now in the context of his solo work. I go, oh, wow, they're really good. So, but album ends fantastic constantly. Caroline's a good track. And Adios, Tara Tara is a really good ending track.
Loved it.
Absolutely fucking love it. And I'm the same way with you, Dan. When it finished, because I put the album, I want to be surprised, because when it's an artist I really like, I'll listen to one or two singles depending on what it is, and then I'll let it play through. I was so mad when it ended.
Yeah.
And then it stopped, and then it went to another Miles. Oh no, it went to Last Shadow Puppets song. I was like, fuck, that's the album? Oh my God, that went by fast. I played it like another two times. I'm like, this is incredible.
Yeah, I do appreciate the brevity. This is drop territory, but this is cohesive enough to be an album because unlike online, this is so hard to compare this to YoungBoy NBA because they're just so vastly different as projects. But the only thing I'll say is that this is what we mean with intentionality for an album. He was going for a sound. He was going for a thing he wanted to accomplish. He gave himself a period of time. He found some artists to work with and then made it happen, got those influences together, and there was intentionality to the project, and therefore you got execution, and therefore you got something that like is out of my realm generally, but something I really enjoyed. So like, you can really do this with music.
And again, as you know, so many people are saying rock is dead. There are so many different forms of it that you can get. And you can even get some of these throwback tunes and crispy tunes, as we like to say, onto here and have at it. It's so much fun. Miles, if you're listening to this, I want you on. I want to dissect this goddamn album.
Yeah, I definitely want to hear about that question. So arbitrary scale we have on this week. Every week we have arbitrary scales on Audio Face because rating systems are pointless. This week we have the green, yellow, red card system from elementary school based on behavioral statuses. Who wants to figure out? If you want to guess what cards that Sean and I had most of the time in elementary school, comment below and we'll let you know if you're right or not. But I'm going to give this a green card.
The answer may surprise you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 100% green card. Absolute green card. Like, you are allowed by the U.S. government to stay in this country. Like, 100% green card.
Fantastic. Yes. Solid album.
Great. Solid record. Love it.
Moving on, Cardi B once again. You know, a lot of people have been fixing their mouths to do some Cardi B slander lately, and I just won't have it. And so Bronx native Cardi B has, as many of us have, reacted with shock and horror at the Bronx apartment building fire earlier in January that killed 17 people. It was a deadly fire because the landlords that were there, hashtag no politics, did no maintenance on the building. They were hiking rents and doing no maintenance on the building, so the heat wasn't working in New York City in the winter. And so as a result, people, like, for survival, did the often unadvisable thing of using your stovetop oven range as heat. And then I think it was like a malfunctioning microwave or something like that. But either way, like, these were like issues that should have happened. And there was just a bunch of issues in the apartment building that didn't work. Smoke was able to spread because the door of the apartment and the door stairwell were left open, even though they're supposed to close automatically. And there were issues that had been reported at this at this apartment complex for months and months and months on end. But it just be like that in America when you're poor. Take notes, Gunna. But Cardi B, again, like, not all celebrities and trap artists are like terrible. Cardi B and the mix of, to be clear, it was a space heater, by the way. So yeah, it was a space heater that was malfunctioning and caused this tragic fire. 17 victims died from it. And Cardi B is,
how dare you use a space heater in the early January fucking New York?
Yeah. Absolutely sickening, but
it is.
Cardi B said, "I'm extremely proud to be from the Bronx and I have lots of family and friends who live there and work there still. So when I heard about the fire and all the victims, I know I need to do something to help. I cannot begin to imagine the pain and anguish that the families of the victims are experiencing, but I hope not having to worry about the costs associated with burying their loved ones will help as they move forward and heal. I send my prayers and condolences to everyone affected by this horrific tragedy." Thank you, Cardi B. Like, once again, showing up for working people, showing up for, like, regular people in her community. And, like, funeral costs are mad expensive.
They are absurdly expensive.
Yeah, doing it, like, if you're living in that kind of apartment complex, a funeral cost are not going to be great for you. Mm-hmm. And so, obviously, nothing is going to replace the fact that these lives shouldn't have been lost in the first place. And that's the society that we have set up where people are just get a bad roll of the dice and just are born to fail, more or less. And America does nothing about it. But yeah, there's one little bit of solace that can be done, which is there. The costs associated with burying will be paid for by Cardi B because she has the wealth to do so. And so, yeah, the families can do that kind of effort to moving on. But what has to actually happen, hashtag no politics, but truly is like pressure on these landlords for failing to upkeep these buildings, for creating unsafe conditions for tenants, which is just so widespread in New York. So much so there's like meme pages about this stuff, right? So that's where the pressure needs to go on politicians in New York, such as Chuck Schumer, who promise people things and don't follow through. That's the issue with politics.
Yep. Moving on, we have Brockhampton News. So they are announcing an indefinite hiatus.
Again.
So allegedly, the upcoming shows at the O2 at Camden, Brixton, in London, and at Coachella, that Dan may or may not be going to, will be their final performances as a group, and all the rest of their tour has been canceled. The Here Right Now world tour was canceled. So if you're trying to see them one last time, allegedly, you got two options. Bitch got two options, stripping or losing.
Are you Russian or are you dragon?
And yeah, I mean, it's kind of, they formed very interestingly, you know, like through the internet of, I forget who exactly it was, because they got like 85 members at one point of like, hey, do you want to start a band? And some dudes literally just end up starting a group online, and kind of that's how Brockhampton came to be. There was some incidents a couple years ago of Brockhampton and stuff, and maybe Hassan was a member, maybe at some point, but
Both of those things unrelated, by the way.
Both of those things entirely unrelated. It's just like they have a very interesting history and stuff. And their music was good. Like, we reviewed a bunch of their records, and some of them were fantastic. Some of them were interesting.
Yeah. Brockhampton, they definitely marked an era of music. I think there was a lot riding on what they could be because, oh, this is like this internet-formed boy band that's very broad musically. You have a lot of different people, different backgrounds. It could have been an interesting thing. I think many times it was. There are some like really cool shows that I went to of Brockhampton's that were good. And then you had like the less great things, such as, the one band member, I'm forgetting his name right now, who was accused of a lot of sexual violence, grooming type things, and was promptly kind of kicked out of the band. Then the band promptly spoke to Shia LaBeouf for healing, which may have been one of the more ill-advised decisions on that. And still released music that was decent. They're just kind of hit or miss with me. But yeah, this seems like they are going to be kind of calling it quits from this and going their separate ways. And of course, when you have a band of upwards of, at one point, 30 people, solo careers on solo careers on solo careers. In reality, there's only like two or three, I think, who are like memorable from Brockhampton who may try to do a solo thing. We'll see how it goes. This might be like the start of like the next big pop star's career, because you never know with these things. But
yeah, sure.
I'd say overall the band was pretty interesting, and it was a really interesting project and concept. But I still think that they were a lot of over-promising and under-delivering, considering how many heads you had together and how wild you could have made music and how mainstream they could have. I think Brockhampton, even in its best incarnations, were a lot of missed opportunities. Great run by the boys. And wish them luck on whatever they're doing in the future.
Yep. Wholeheartedly agree. So moving on, So Yon Dolph, he's killed outside a Memphis bakery in November. His suspected killers were captured, which is insane. Surveillance footage of the murders, because this is America and this is what happens, was out, and that prompted for the police to do an investigation. All that governs, and anyways, they got two people in custody. One was one day and one was another day. And you have Justin Johnson and other suspect was Cornelius Smith. They were charged with first degree murder and all that.
Theft of property in between $10,000 and $60,000. And Justin Johnson at least had outstanding warrant for weapons violation and was previously sentenced to 5 years in the clink for involvement in a triple shooting. So, not to be glib, but not sending their best, because they got caught again.
Again.
So yeah, at least there is some justice coming out of that. The Young Dolph, like, tragedy was really bad. Like, there are people who were mourning at the bakery. That was like a bakery that was known by Young Dolph. It was like favorite one by his neighborhood. And that got shot up. Like, the mourning of the thing got shot up. So that was ridiculous.
Which, it's insane what's happening. What happened over there. It's sickening, honestly. So,
yes.
Fuck. Stay now, Clink.
Anyways, last album we have of the week is The Overload by Yard Act, debut album by a new band. 11 songs, 37 minutes long. Mm-hmm. And I love coming across these where, like, you just find a new band, you haven't really heard much about them that much, and then you hit play and they just slap, just nonstop. It's just like continuous, like mom hitting you when you're 10 because you messed up in school, just after every single syllable keeps slapping nonstop.
Changla or a belt?
Both. You're alternating arms. There's got to be some like exercise like that in the gym where you're like alternating.
I might have to call it the Changla from now on, like a dumbbell snatch. Kind of like I got to tell when I explain it to people. They feel like you're smacking your child upside the head with the Changla, you know? They messed up.
Akimbo Changlas.
That's horrifying. Like, I'm dipping. Like, I'm not sleeping at home that night. I'll ring you up, be like, oi, like, can I stay with you? Why? Mom got Akimbo Changlas. Fuck.
And on this edition of Therapy Now, so Yard Axe, The Overload is a very just amazing first effort project.
Yeah, it's a really fun indie record.
Punk inspired,
exactly. So this reminded me of, well, they're very different albums, but the way how I received Preoccupations when I got their when we reviewed their record, kind of where you're just like, all right, we'll see what happens. I really haven't heard them, but I didn't realize that they were a different band from a different name. But anyways, and you listen to their record and you're like, oh man, this is awesome. And we get these every once in a while on Audio Face, and these are my favorite days. Yes, really good record. A lot of spoken word in there, which is, or like very monotone scene, which is interesting, but more on that in a little bit. But anyways, The Overload starts off and you can hear like it is like indie punk. It is like there's a lot of different influences of it, but like with a nice modern twist to it. And a lot of themes are on the nose, which I love because it doesn't take itself too seriously. It has a lot of fun with it. And I like that in the way, because I think, especially on a debut record, for someone who has a lot of punk influences and different indie influences, if you try to go out and try to be really hard or try to be other things, you can seem genuine sometimes, depending. But with this kind of doing the style that they did, where it's almost like you're having a laugh a lot of the times, it makes it really fun and enjoyable in that way. Very, very dry humor, which, you know, I like and have.
Yeah. And it's good too, because there's a lot about this record that can get political at times. And we on the Audio Face podcast are known to dabble with the politics from time to time.
Hashtag no politics.
And then so we don't mind that. But that being said, we have also criticized albums and will continue to do so when albums are really preachy or heavy-handed with their messages, or beating a dead horse, so to speak. More on that later. But we talk about our artists and albums when they are not subtle with their message. This is doing it in a way where, look, there's only so much subtlety you can get in anything that's like punk inspired. But I think by having, in what Sean is saying, with a playful manner and approach to it, it doesn't feel like you're being hit over the head with these political messages, so to speak. They're just sort of here and exist on their own as statements, but also don't get in the way too much of just like the fun nature of what the music's supposed to be and what's supposed to feel like.
Exactly. Yeah. Like going into like the actual, like, yeah, the music of it, you have first two songs, Overload, Dead Horse, kind of gets you an idea of what it's going to sound like.
And Dead Horse is that political one where it's self-referential, and like he knows, the vocalist in the song knows that he is being like overly political. He's going over
exactly
on it.
He's because beating the dead horse.
Exactly. And that's self-awareness.
Which is what I love. Hijack the sound and stake your claim to it. Every card played is a statement made, and there's always a new scapegoat to blame for it. England, my heart bleeds. Why'd you abandon me? Yes, I abandoned you too, but we both know I wasn't the one lied to, and I'm not scared of people who don't look like me, unlike you. I I love it when artists have self-awareness, like going back to what I said, where you're on the nose, you're making jokes about yourself, you're not being too serious. I love that, because when you're doing that, a lot of times you're very self-aware in that regard. You're doing it because, like, you know, like, you hear people at nauseam on different subjects. You hear people whining and stuff. You got your Lana Del Rey's and et cetera that we do on Audio Face all the time, where, you know, we started this podcast in 2017 when every artist had made a fucking political record or political statement. Like, y'all don't know what you're talking about and all that. But there's people like this where they're like, all right, we know what we're talking about. But, you know, our wives are sick and tired of us just saying, all right, let me tell you how neoliberalism made this beer $8 at the Honda Center. Sorry, like $13 at the Honda Center. And you're sitting there the entire second period going over why Al Gore is saying that the fucking seas would rise, but didn't do it. And all this shit led to this.
I need you all to picture Sean and his lovely girlfriend, who was a nice person. But like, Sean, like that meme of the guy in the club talking to a girl about crypto or stocks or whatever. and the girl's just like, literally, it's like, please get me out of here. Don't want anything to do with this. Not having it.
She's just watching the hockey game, like actually watching it. And I'm over here like, okay, so, right.
So that
Jimmy
so,
Carter started it. This all happened when the government made Jimmy Carter get rid of his peanut farm.
Anyways. And so then in the 1980s, when Ronald Reagan ushered in the era of this, your girl's trying to catch a shirt.
I mean, I'm even in the name. Anyways, going on Mark's the record. This is why I love Audio Face. Sorry, Yard Act. Really like your record. Payday, fantastic track. Rich is a really fucking funny track. It's like, I love being fucking rich. Like, that's like halfway through the song, it keeps doing that over and over again of saying that. And it's so on the nose. I love it.
Because I am rich. It appears I have become rich. You twitching like some headless bird, whilst the witch doctors poach for the stragglers in the herd, pitching the business down on Skid Row. The line goes out the door and you're right at the back. Man, two more poor dead kids in a ditch. I fucking love being rich. It appears I have become so rich.
That track made me laugh so much.
And yeah, it's that track is as much of a commentary politically as like any of the other previous tracks, where it's the allegory of someone who is rich and happy that they will never have to live like they did when they were poor. And then, not to spoil the song, but like you then go through kind of like the ways that, okay, sometimes you're doing well, sometimes you're not, and having to react to that and interact with that. It's very well thought out, subversive, kind of on the nose, thumbing, like finger to authority kind of like punk. Like when I say a punk mindset or a punk undertone, and sometimes I'm talking about like trap songs or rock songs that don't sound like punk, this is what I mean. You have to have this kind of deference to authority in your music and in your records that really make it good.
Yes. Quarantine the Sticks, another great song, kind of going down. You have a little bit of that middle of Incident, Witness, Can I Get, Land of the Blind, which are all good tracks. Quarantine the Sticks is a track I really like too, because the way it moves, and I really, really like that bass line a ton. It's just, it's such a good, fun bass line on it. I really like it. Also, side note, a lot of these tracks are like that sweet spot, like 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes or so. Then you have Tall Poppies, which is a longer song, which is like 6:30 for the song. And it's one that's like, it reminds me a bit of like early LCD Sound System, like Daft Punk is playing in my house era. LCD Sound System, where Murphy kind of goes on like vocals of like, kind of spoken word going through a story, especially on Tall Poppies. It gave me that idea of it, but more of like a punk more than an LCD Sound System. But and then the last two tracks, Pour Another, 100% Endurance, land that plane perfectly with an ILS3 approach, because 5G towers aren't installed at their airports because they understand it. Maybe Yard Actor pilots too, who knows. It's, but all jokes aside, I really like this record a lot. Like, for a first album, it is fantastic. The one thing I will say is the next record, full LP that you do, don't do so much spoken word as like, or like monotone kind of singing that you're doing here. It fits very, very good for the Overload. But I don't want it to become your one little niche sound and you keep doing it over and over again. I want you to expand on this because this is fantastic as a first record. Let's expand and do more things. But keep up your sense of humor because I fucking love it. And I like it when people are on the nose and I need more of that in music.
Yeah, I'd like to see, you know, not ask them to change. Like, keep your shit a little political, but get more even topical. Like, just talk about regular, everyday human experience, slice of life kind of things. And then I'd like to see that angle approached with these types or like this type of band. I think really whatever this band sort of takes on as a topic, you can you probably won't really do wrong with them. I have really strong hopes in Yard Act. I think it'll be really good. The key is kind of the theme of the podcast this week is intentionality with your albums, which I felt like this had. And hopefully in the future, Yard Act will continue to do so.
Exactly. Yep.
Arbitrary scale. We love our Arby scales. Green, yellow, red cards. This is giving us a green. This is one of the easier scales because like there's not really much equivocation.
It's a green. 100% green. You know, hold on. It's so good that it's a red card. You did so well that you like, you outsmarted your teacher when you're in like, you know, in primary school in second grade. And you were such a smart ass to her. Exactly. You got it. And my, you know, I might be self-reporting here, but you outsmarted your teacher in second grade and you got a straight red and you had to go to like the whatever area. You can't sit by your friend and stuff because you were a smart ass. And everybody sits there at the bench and asks you, hey, man, what you here for? Like it's fucking jail when you're third grade because these guys are preparing for it already. Got to start them young. You know what I'm right? You got to get that draft to the fucking Folsom prison.
That's the American education system, buddy.
Like, what you here for? He's like, stole some stuff. What you here for? Man, I was late and I didn't have my homework and for like a fifth time. What you here for? I had to tell my teacher that East Germany didn't start, or the Berlin Wall didn't get put up until 1955. So like families could have moved over here from it, but she didn't believe me. But then I gave her a book on it because I'm actually German. But she got mad and gave me a red card and sent me to this area over here.
And that second grader was Richard Nixon. Just kidding. Anyways, quick hits.
I was about to do some Nixon quotes, but that's a rabbit hole. That's a rabbit hole we don't want to go down.
Quick hits. Rapper Kodak Black reiterates, quote, reiterates, he was not having sex at a hockey game in a viral video. Despite this viral video, which we will not be playing on YouTube, Kodak Black seemed to be with his boo, his bae thing. And said bae thing was gyrating and twerking, apparently, on Gunna. Oh, sorry, not Gunna. I'm doing this too much. Kodak Black. don't even think about it. And Kodak Black was insistent that... he was insistent that she was just twerking everyone and they weren't actually doing anything untoward in the hockey game, or during the hockey game. Was it like a boring game or something? Like, what was up?
You want to know why? It was a Florida Panthers game, so everything that weird goes down in Florida. Even though Florida Panthers are one of the best teams in the NHL, super fucking random this year. That was beautiful. The best part of it, though, and you don't know this, the NHL made a post of, hey, welcome Kodak Black, whatever, and it's just Kodak Black being Kodak Black in the middle of, like, in the arena with just his stupid hair and shit. It's like, it's a Kodak moment, and all that stuff. But they had to delete the post about, like, an hour in because of said incident, and it was wondrous. I got screenshots. I remember that because I saw this and I saw it and I sent it to Tommy and Justin, and then Tommy just responds back half an hour later like, did you see this? And I just like, I dropped what I was doing and just howled. Also, they are definitely having sex. I don't care what they say.
The ghetto is here, y'all.
I think it's okay if they say it.
Moving on into a really quick version of music and music business worldwide, Slim Pickens.
Slim Pickens.
Slow. And this is a really big news episode of Audio Face, but we're just doing all the Audio Face things in one episode here. Quick update. The Grammys, which are usually held right around now, honestly, and held in Los Angeles, right around now being like late January, are actually going to be held in early April and in Las Vegas because of the Omicron COVID-19 variant spike that happened. The Las Vegas MGM Grand Garden Arena will be hosting the 2022 Grammys. It'll be interesting. And it's one of the Latin Grammys were hosted in November, so they should more or less be used to the format. But it'll be interesting to see, will there be an audience? Will the format itself be the same? Award shows are starting to go under different evolutions over the past couple of years as a result of people just basically not watching them and instead watching better shows they should watch, like the Audio Face Awards, which you can catch clips of on YouTube or become a member of Syndicate23.co and watch the full lightly censored version of the Audio Face Awards. And yeah, I think this is just going to be another case where they're going to have this event. It might be a thing, a viral moment or whatever, like on Twitter, so to speak. But the views are going to be abysmal. And we talked about the Grammy decisions this year being ridiculous. So the rewards are not going to make many people happy, I don't think.
Yeah, and also, it's the Grammys, so who gives a fuck? Listen to Audio Face Awards. We are better.
I skipped the story.
I'm going to do that right now. Cool. Old Music is an interesting article from Consequence of Sound from Koss. Old Music now makes up nearly 70% of American consumption, apparently. So it's interesting. So there's an essay, jazz critic and music historian, Ted Gioia. Gioia? Sorry if I'm butchering your last name. I mean, people call me Scene, so I understand. right, you know that. they lay out the fact that modern day music consumption, but apparently on some datas, basically old music released more than 18 months ago make up about 69.8% of the current American music market. So that's insane. Basically, it's saying, it's saying what we've been saying for a long time, like the music is good, you just have to search for it, and that so many people now are saying like music is really bad, which there's a lot, fair point, but there are a lot of stuff. It's just the way that the media's work, the way that the music industry as a whole works, is they pump out all of these just generic pop music, you know, pop out your YB Better fans of just throwing out albums all the time. And you just have so much out there that you don't have many mediums that really set the record straight and say, hey, these are records that you should check out. These are things that are going on in the industry and all that stuff. And that's why we have this goddamn podcast, is to get people out and say, hey, look, there is a fantastic record out. Like, example, you got Miles Kane, Yard Act. Fantastic record you should check out. They really don't have that many followers or something. Miles Kane is relatively big and Yard Act is fairly new. So, but you should go and like, give them a follow, give them like a... give them some of your concierge and that stuff, and go try and see them live if you can. This and that. The reason why is there's so much good music, but so many people have given up. And I keep telling them, like, that's why we have this podcast. That was one of the ideas I had when Dan and I were figuring this out. Do we want to do this? I'm like, because I listen to so much as is. And so many people ask me for it because they know me as one of the music people. So I'm like, hey, go out. But it's just really telling us that, hey, like, so many people listen to stuff, and I'm guilty of this as well, because I listen to a ton of old music constantly, as well as new music.
Yeah, so. And I overall, this isn't bad news to me, honestly. I guess this isn't as quick of a hit as I thought it was, but
I want to go on a small rant.
I love it, but like this is, I think it's a good thing, because, and this is what we kind of get to do with our bonus episodes sometimes, that I was also a very particular thing in thinking of doing the podcast, because just for our own sanity, like we do very much enjoy taking time out of our weekends and talking about music, but as with anything, it does become like a drag after a while if you're doing the same thing. And so to change things up, sometimes we do episodes where we listen to old music, and consequently those end up being some of our most popular episodes, just because sometimes you have music fans who want to know what is the hottest take on the newest album that came out. And a lot of times you have people who are music fans who have bands they liked and they just want to dive deeper into those bands, or bands they've heard of that they want to dive deeper into. And so I think casual music listeners are very usually listening to things that came out 1, 2, 3, 4 years ago. And so we're really on the edge of all these things. I mm-hmm. want to wrap up before we do with some of the data here. So collected by MRC Data, old music, which was music released more than 18 months ago, makes up almost 70% of the current American music market, which is a 19.3% change in volume from 2020 when it was only 65.1%. So 65.1 mm-hmm. to 69.8. So it basically it went up 4%. But like as far as a percent increase, that's different. But that is, so you can see like the trend is people are listening to more and more older music. But this stat blew my mind. The 200 most popular tracks now account for less than 5% of total streams. It was twice that rate just 3 years ago. And looking at iTunes purchases, which is a little bit outdated because a lot of people are streaming their music, but the most purchased music are all old artists. The most purchased tracks on Apple Music's platform are filled with the names of bands from the last century, like Creedence Clearwater and The Police. So, I mean, I think a lot of that could be there's some music that isn't streaming, and so you want to be able to purchase that stuff, and that music that isn't streaming tends to be older because of many different legal reasons we talk about on more boring segments of Audio Face. But I think it is just amazing because on one end of the music industry, like the concert end of the music industry, young people rule and dominate and take over. Like whatever's newest is taking over. That's what's making the money in concerts. And that's where a lot of like live music is, where money is. But on the other end, with people just at home listening to music in their leisure, that's where the older artists or artists who have been around for a while rake it up. And so, and that seems to make sense. Most people listen to music outside of the first weekend it's came out because of just the definition of time. We just love to be cool like that.
Yeah. And last quick hit, Meatloaf tragically passed away this past week. He was known for Bat Out of Hell and is best known for playing Eddie in the Rocky Horror Picture Show. He died at age 74 due to COVID complications. So another pretty famous, influential artist and stuff who has passed away tragically of COVID. So shit's not over, folks.
Yeah. TMZ is like saying this. The family didn't want to release the cause of death, apparently. But yeah, apparently there was from COVID-related symptoms. Bringing this up only because Meatloaf was apparently in his later years.
Yeah.
In his last years, kind of becoming an anti-vaxxer kind of person. And it must be stated that the studies have shown about people getting COVID, especially with this new variant, having the vaccine versus not having the vaccine. And you are far more likely to live and survive this variant and like COVID-19 in general if you are vaccinated.
I.e. your boy here.
Yeah. And a lot of people I know who like went down really hard with it and like were vaccinated, so more or less we're fine. Thankfully so, because we don't really sit down and think of the trauma about like a 9/11 a day happening every single day, more or less for 2 years. And we just kind of like are told to move on and live with it. And you get small names, so to speak, of like everyday people who pass, and you get like large names, so to speak, of celebrities and things like this passing as well.
I mean, rest in peace, Herman Cain. Never forget.
Yeah. I don't want to dwell on like the latter stuff. Nah. Like Meatloaf is kind of like a really legendary artist. I almost forget. There is Bat Out of Hell 2.
Oh god.
With I Do Anything for Love But I Won't Do That, which was like the number one song and one of Meatloaf's biggest hits ever. These are all just like a storied history of and really interesting artist. He also went vegetarian for a little while, shortly in like his later years. He wouldn't change his name to Vegloaf like the company wanted him to, but apparently he like supported a bunch of like vegan, vegetarian lifestyle and eating. Which I guess that's fine. That's cool. But overall, it's just another like tragic loss in the music industry. And so, as we do sometimes in Audio Face, it's not necessarily the funnest of notes, but we'll do a little musical send-off of Meatloaf. Yep. So that has been Audio Face. Thank you very much for listening. If you are a member, make sure you catch the bonus episode of 216, where we will review just no news, straight music album reviews. FKA Twigs, Earl Sweatshirt, Corday, and Bonobo's latest projects should be really good. That was a hell of a week last week. And you can find Audio Face on Twitter, Instagram at Audio Face Pod. Sean can be found on Twitter at SW Suarez and on Instagram at SW Suarez. I can be found on Twitter at Dan from the Web, on Instagram at Dan from the Internet, and on TikTok at Dan from the Internet. Because that's my life now. And yeah.
Yeah, you cannot find me on TikTok ever. That's just not happening. I lay my foot down at that. Sorry, Dan.
Yeah. No West Elm Sean's happening over here. If you only know about the West Elm Caleb.
No. I literally just heard about it. I somehow came across it and I go, this is exactly why I don't interact with Zeds and I don't have TikTok. This is exactly why. It made me laugh, though.
A wonderful case study. But yes, thank you very much for checking out this episode, and we'll see you for the rest of the year. Cheers.
Oh my god, he was dating the same girl at the same time. Oh, that was a travesty. Bye.
Oh, that was real.